And could somebody close the door? Okay. Go around and say hi to the folks in the cloud Zendo. And then those in the dirt Zendo will introduce themselves. Starting with Tyler. Bob.
Bob.
Gathel.
Gathel.
Jinryu.
Jinryu.
Paul.
Paul.
Marv. Whose basket is getting close to done. It looks beautiful. Trig. And do you want to unmute and remind me what your name is? Paulette.
Paulette.
Lori.
Lori.
Sabrina.
Sabrina.
And Ruthann.
Yeah.
And in the dirt Zendo,
Coral.
Coral.
Dennis.
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 Erica.
Erica.
Walt.
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 Mark.
Mark.
Carson.
Carson.
Ted.
Ted.
Dave.
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 Andrew.
Andrew. And Domio.
Just
slide back. All right, let's see. Announcements. Jukai ceremony, June 5th. Come to witness, I think it's 10 people receiving the precepts and formally becoming Buddhists. Let's see. We're going to have a interesting series of talks and classes and discussions in July led by Sangha members. So there's going to be a bunch of way-seeking mind talks and discussions and stuff like that. It's a sweet kind of time of year that a lot of people are traveling, so things tend to be smaller and more intimate, but very sweet in their own right.
And we have more slots.
Okay, yes, and if you have been around for a year or so, particularly if you've already taken Jukai, we're looking at you.
Yes.
Take and a spot.
You can
spot
do it.
And share a way-seeking mind talk. You can talk to me if you just want to share something and are wondering what that might be. You can talk to me about it. And we do have the dates and location for our March 2023 session. And that's going to be featured in our newsletter this week. The woman who does our newsletter, Lisa, makes these beautiful graphics, and she made a lovely graphic for our session. Let's see. I know there are many opportunities to serve the Sangha, and thereby all kinds of benefits to that. Besides serving the Sangha, you also a lot of times taking a volunteer position can be a way to get yourself to come to practice, you know, like you sign up, you gotta come, you gotta open the door. So it's kind of, you know, helps reinforce your intention to come. But also, you know, you end up getting to know the other people who do that job, and it's just a nice way to make further connection in the Sangha. And we definitely have dirt Zendo jobs to do, opening, closing, a job that I'm calling Zoom Connector, because I was calling it Zoom Tech, but then, or no, Sangha Connector, because I realized that this person, you know, fires up the computers in the Zendo, you know, sets out the chairs, sets up the microphones, does all this, and basically it's about connecting the dirt Zendo and the cloud Zendo, right? It's a very important interface. So I'm calling that person the Sangha. It's not a very elegant term, but maybe we'll come up with a better one at some point. The Sangha connector, so we need that. But we also have, for those of you who are in the cloud Sangha, we have roles that we need filled there as well, including Zoom host. You sign on and start the meeting, greeter. So that's one of the things we're most proud of here at Brightway is that we are very friendly and welcoming, and that when you come, we say, hey, have I seen you before? You know, that we're actually, that role of greeter who is just there to, you know, welcome especially new people and see if they have any questions, that kind of thing is very important. And also Zoom videographer who records the talks and or the classes, and then also somebody who edits those in auto-editing program and posts them to the website. So that's how all of you manage to get to listen to these things at a later date, is that somebody goes through and does that. Bob's been doing all of that audio editing for us, and we really love to see that shared out and rotated around. So if you are, I know I've gotten emails from a couple of you actually who've said that, you know, that you're happy to volunteer. So please, if you do that, you know, don't let me not respond. Keep at me, and we will end up matching you up with a role. And actually, we're going to have a new role in the Sangha volunteer coordinator, but I haven't met up with her yet. So anyway. All right. So any thing that I've forgotten to announce or any questions about any of that stuff?
Yeah. For Jukai, like, do we dress up, or?
Jukai, do you dress up? I mean, you know, I think that would be nice. You know,
black is nice.
Jeans and a dirty T-shirt, probably. You know, not. I mean, this is Portland, so we're not going to be judging anybody. Like, people show up any different way, but you know, that's nice. To just make it a special occasion. And in case I haven't, if anybody, any of you are receiving the precepts through the Cloud Zendo, I've probably already told you this, but you will need some other person present for the ceremony, in particular to witness, so you're not just there all alone, but also we're going to send you a wagesa, that strip of cloth with a decorative knot that will be a sign of having received the precepts. And that, and in the Dirt Zendo, I will be putting that over people's heads. But in the Cloud Zendo, you will need somebody else to stand in as my proxy to put the wagesa over your head. All right. With that, I will turn it over to Coral for our precept class.
Okay, so make sure I'm in this frame. My name is Coral, for those of you who I haven't met, mostly people online. I do want to do a breakout room at the end for whoever is in charge of that on Zoom. Cool. So in the past, sometimes people tell a little bit about themselves and why they took Jukai, and I thought that I would do that just to break the ice and get a little of the jitters out. So when I graduated college in 2016, I was in a lot of debt. I had credit card debt and student loans, and I was kind of pissed off that I worked so hard to get a really boring desk job. And I was really overwhelmed with a lot of different things. Anyway, I was listening to this podcast called The Minimalists, and they did make a documentary or two on Netflix, but they had a podcast that I really liked. And as a part of their podcast, they would listen to voicemails. You could call in and ask them a question, and they would discuss it. And so, as you know, I wanted to become a minimalist. I wanted to minimize my debt. I wanted to minimize my commitments. I wanted to, like, completely overhaul my life. And I made this grand plan. And it was going to take me about, I don't know, 2 years to make any progress at all. And that was great. I could see that on the horizon, but I was really still miserable day to day. So I called in the podcast, told them all the stuff. How do I find contentment day to day? And then when the next episode came out, their host, the host or the guest was Dan Harris. And I don't know if you, Dan Harris is like, he's like a famous anchor man, but he also had just written the book 10% Happier, which is a very secular book on his path through to meditation and mindfulness. And so, of course, his answer to finding contentment in the moment was meditation and mindfulness. And so he suggested I started this practice. And anyway, I really sucked at meditation in the beginning. I have no self-control or, you know, impulse control or anything. You know, nobody to hold me accountable. So when I moved to Portland, I started looking for a group to meditate with. And at the time, I didn't realize this, but I was looking for a sangha. And when I found Bright Way, it just felt like home. And I do have to say that the natural next step was taking the precepts. I have a lot of faith in the precepts and that they're a really good foundation for my life. So yeah, that's why I ended up taking Jukai. So if anyone's on the fence, I hope, I don't know, you can feel better about making that decision. Anyway, I don't know if that helped me get the jitters out. I'm still pretty nervous. But I'll dive into the precept. I'm doing precept number 8. Do not be mean with dharma or wealth. Share understanding. Give freely of self. And the genuine all-pervading dharma, being jealous of nothing, is the precept of not being mean with dharma or wealth. One phrase, one verse. That is the 10,000 things in 100 grasses. One dharma, one realization. That is all Buddhas and dharma ancestors. From the beginning, not one thing has been begrudged. I chose this precept because it's at the end of the list, and I would have and I would have the most time to prepare. What I didn't know is that there's actually so much to this precept, and I'm not going to get to everything, but I decided to cover 3 things, and that's why we should follow this precept, how we should follow this precept, how you should give, and the expectations around generosity and giving, and who you should give to. So I'm going to start with the why, and I'm going to start with by reading a little bit out of the Waking Up to What You Do, the Diane Rossetto book. And I'm actually going to read a small paragraph about the net of Indra, which is not in the section about this precept, but it's just a metaphor that I really love, and I'm going to return back to it during this talk. So, there is a metaphor from the ancient Buddhist Avatamsaka Sutra that conceives the universe as an enormous net extending infinitely in all directions, protecting and nurturing all of life, nothing excluded. At the juncture of each knot of the net, there is a shiny, multifaceted, reflective jewel. Because of its many sides, each jewel reflects every other jewel in the net in a vast network of mutual support of each other's existence. It's difficult to imagine the countless number of jewels in a net this size, let alone the endless number of reflections on each jewel. No jewel exists without the other jewel. No jewel stands alone. All are interdependent on the presence of others. If one appears, all appear. If one does not appear, none appear. If you were to place one black dot on any of the one of jewels, it would appear in all the jewels. The net of Indra is a compelling image illustrating unceasing, unobstructed interpenetration and mutual interdependence of all existence. Every action, every word, every thought, our memories, desires, fears, urges, frustrations, happiness, peace, well-being, ripples its effect into the universe. No one, no thing is excluded in this mutual resonance and all-inclusive relationship. So I love that, mostly because it sounds really pretty, and I like to think of it, but I also love the idea of being a part of the net and how everybody is related, or where everybody's connected in this way. And I personally can relate everything back to this illustration in my mind. But one example of this that maybe isn't super related to the precept, but is a good example of the net, is climate change refugees. There's some people in this world who live in places where climate change doesn't impact them, or they have wealth that allows them to live without the impacts of climate. And yet there's people in this world who are losing their wellness and their homes because of climate change. And to think that these people losing, who are climate change refugees, isn't going to affect you eventually is ridiculous. I won't go too far into that, but that was just one example that stands out really strong to me when I'm picturing like this lesson of the net of Indra. So I think this precept comes down to our delusion of mine and yours, or ours and theirs. I'm going to read one more thing out of the book. I promise this will be the last thing that I read directly out of the book. Now, so this is from Mind of Clover. I have to figure out what page I need to be on. When our delusions and attachments of mine and yours, ours and theirs, get in the way, we are dualistic in our sparing and sharing, and we cannot testify to the presentation of a flower. This kind of division and attitude is the fundamental delusion. See where it leads us in national affairs, with the poor becoming angrier and the rich becoming more arrogant. See where it leads us in international affairs, with each country protecting its own while pressing outward against all others, as the world shrinks with its burgeoning technology. In our own communities and families, sometimes we may tend to protect ourselves in subgroups without much generosity for other subgroups. It is easy to criticize the world, hard to see how we have contributed to its suffering by our own violation of this precept. So if we keep this net of Indra analogy in our mind, we immediately see that this dualistic thinking is damaging not only to others, but to ourselves. This type of dualistic thinking can impact us on a global scale, but also within our communities and families as well. And that kind of leads me to the line, being jealous of nothing is the precept of not being mean with Dharma. And I think this means it's literally impossible to be jealous when nothing belongs to you and there's nothing belongs to them. There's no ours and theirs. And so we're eliminating this dualistic thinking. A personal example of this for me is our wedding, Carson's, my wedding was planned for May 2020. And we had to cancel it because of COVID. And we had a really sweet elopement and it was really nice, but I had a fully fleshed out wedding where our families were gonna come together, we were gonna gather and celebrate. And I never got to do that. And now it's 2022 and there's gonna be like a record-breaking amount of weddings this year. And I'm in a few of them. and I'm jealous. It feels gross, but I feel really jealous of these people. And it's not helpful for me to be like, why can't I just be happy for them? Why can't I just do this? And it's more helpful for me to think about these people as my closest friends, and I love them, and their joy is my joy. And eliminating that dualistic thinking makes it easier to sit with these feelings of jealousy. And as I was practicing my talk, I was thinking, what does this wedding story have anything to do with generosity? Other than just talking about myself. But if I went into that, my friend's wedding with feelings of jealousy and if I was cranky, I would have a black spot on my gem that I would be reflecting off to everybody else. And I have an opportunity to be generous with my joy. I think it's really tempting to think about this precept in monetary terms. And I'm trying really hard to steer away from that. So I don't believe that jealousy is the root cause of breaking this precept. I think it's a symptom. So beating yourself up over feelings of jealousy isn't going to help. But recognizing it and looking at it and trying to find this dualistic thinking will go a long way. And I think that introduces the concept of coveting. Like, I want to covet my wedding experience. Coveting is the opposite of giving freely. So another example of this is coveting wealth. Think of all the large corporations and mega rich in the world coveting their wealth to the point where they're destroying the planet and creating socioeconomic inequalities. So that's my why you should follow this precept. By eliminating our dualistic thinking, we are opening ourselves to more joy. And once we all understand that we share the same world and resources and wealth, then we understand that this hoarding and coveting is damaging not only to others, but yourself, even if you are super rich and feel like you can covet without consequences. Okay, so I'm going to move into the how. So there's a story in the Rosetto book where she lets someone pass in line at the grocery store at the checkout stand because they have less items in their cart to check out with. And this person doesn't acknowledge her or say thank you. And she's feeling a little miffed or judgmental of this person. And I think everybody's experienced that, where you do something nice for someone and they don't acknowledge you at all. And it feels bad. But what she doesn't know is that she was giving with a price tag attached, or strings attached, I like to say. And I know that we've probably always all have done something and expected a thank you and didn't get one, but I think a lot of us have also received gifts that we feel uncomfortable about because we know there's a price tag or strings attached. And maybe even some of us have know people who we will never accept gifts from because the way that they give gifts is, you know, confusing and manipulative. So I was pondering the price tag, the, you know, giving with expectations, and I was thinking of some examples, and my mind went to some pretty dark places, like when a man takes a woman out on a date and expects sex. But I think people with really good intentions can make this error as well, like helping a sibling or a really good friend through a tough time and expecting that to repair an unrelated and unresolved issue you have with that person. Like, how could you be mad about that thing that anymore? How are you still mad about that? I just drove you to work for a week while your car was broken. Or giving your kids spending money and expecting them to want to spend more time with you because of that. And so these are pretty innocent, but are still breaking the precept. So that's my how. When you're giving freely, what are your intentions when gift giving? Are you really giving freely of self, or are you giving with expectations? And lastly, I'm going really fast, so I hope you guys are feeling chatty tonight. the who. So I feel like this can, you know, loosely be related back to the net of Indra again. I'm going to talk about who we're going to give to. We are all connected, right? Everyone on the planet is a part of this net. There's not individual nets for families or religions or certain communities. And so you can't just think of this precept while dealing with the people close to you in your community, like family members or Sangha. So don't be tempted to break this precept because somebody has different political views than you, or lives in a different country, or has even wronged you in the past. I was thinking about this precept in traffic, and somebody needed to merge over, and they had a political sticker on their car that I did not agree with. And, you know, I wasn't petty. I let them in. But I could have been like, no, F you, and just like didn't let them in because of this totally unrelated political sticker on their car. Or maybe a family member or someone you know needs help and you're like, oh, they wouldn't even appreciate it, or they wronged someone I love, or they hurt me in the past. Or lastly, giving to a person facing homelessness. If you have a person facing homelessness is asking you for help and you have the means to give, do you give? Or do you think about things like, how did you let it get this far? Or why can't you just work? Not realizing that they may have had learning disabilities that prevented them from finishing school, or an abusive home life that caused trauma with no access to mental health care. Maybe they had a predisposition to addiction, or they didn't become an addict until they were homeless. So that's the who part of this precept. I think we have a natural inclination to have judgmental narrative when deciding if and when we're going to give. And yeah, maybe we can drop that judgment. Okay. I was hoping that to last longer, but I'd like to go into breakout rooms now. We have time, so maybe like 12 minutes. And I would really like to hear from every group. So if you have someone to report back, I'm interested to hear where this goes. So what is the middle way with this precept? There are a lot of people who need help. And as an individual, you do not have the resources to give freely to everyone in the world, and maybe not even everyone in your family circle. So how do you decide when to and when not to give in the face of need with this precept in mind?
Yeah, I'm going to set them up in just a second. I was listening to you, and so I'm not terribly prepared.
No worries. I'll even say the question again. So these breakout rooms, yeah?
Oh, no, I was going to say, you still have breakout room capability in Rio? I thought you got
it. I do.
Oh, okay, never mind. I'll stop what I'm doing, then you go.
So what is the middle way with this precept? As an individual, you don't have the resources to give freely to everyone in the world, or maybe even people close to you. So how do you decide when to give and when not to give with this precept in mind?
What size
breakout? Oh, 4 people? 3 to 4 people? Okay, we have returned. Is there anybody who wants to talk?
Say, who wants to talk first?
Who's going to talk first? I'm going to say it like a threat. Okay, Andrew.
So I guess I was the designated spokesman for our group, and we talked. We actually got a little bit off subject, but I don't think that's such a bad thing. We talked about how hard it is to in the spirit of giving, is there also a boundary? Where it relates to mean people, rude people. And how hard it can be to be in the spirit of giving when someone presents themselves to you that way. And one of the examples that I brought up is that in my practice right now, so I have two really strong parts of my practice right now. The first one is my home sitting practice. And the second one is the way I see it right now, the best way that I can give is to practice patience. And I brought up, not every gift has to be obvious. Some, you know, the notion of the unseen gift. And in my group, we all disagreed a little bit about what, you know, what that would look like and what it entails. But myself, speaking for myself, I can tend to be a very impatient person. And I can sometimes, more so as of 5 or 6 years ago, and then longer than that, you know, I can tend to be an angry person. I can tend to be an impatient person. And so if I, the gift that I am working on learning to give right now is the gift of patience and understanding. And yes, even sometimes when it's really, really hard to do the opposite, and when, as one member of my group suggested, when I probably shouldn't. However, that's my practice right now. And I can kind of think of that as an unseen gift, because if someone is being very harsh to me, overly harsh towards me, and I give the gift of patience, whether or not that makes them reflect upon themselves, I don't know, but I kind of like to think of it that way. And you know, we talked about what is the middle way with, you know, off to each side of the middle way is a ditch. And so how do you navigate these extremes when in the act of giving? That'd probably be the best job that I can do in some of what we talked about in our group.
Very nice. Thank you. I love the idea of patience as a gift. There's a part in the Mind of Clover where it mentions that this precept is all the precepts combined. And I don't know if this is what that meant. At the beginning I was like, I'm not even going there. I don't know what that means. But but when you practice the precepts, all of the precepts, you are refining your gem, right? And that is a gift to others. It's a gift to everybody in the net, right? So I think patience is a wonderful gift. Yeah. Who's next?
You have a hand in the cloud.
Oh, Mick.
So I've actually been, this has been a very tricky one. I'm reminded of a book that was written by Norman Fisher, and it was called The World Could Be Otherwise. I was reading it, and so it's about the paramitas, it's about the perfections. One is the perfection of generosity. And in it, he's got lots of really great advice, but he has this one story that he tells where he would hold a ball in one hand and he would just give it to the other hand. And then he would hold it in one hand and he would just give it to the other hand, and he would just do it back and forth. And I will be honest with you, I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. I thought that's dumb. And I just kind of dismissed it. But it was one of those things that like stood out, and I couldn't kind of stop thinking about it. And then I was listening to Domio's podcast. She has a series of podcasts about Bodhisattva Shishobo, like Dogen's The Way to Engage Living Beings. Dogen talks a lot about generosity there, because I'm sensitive to the gifts that I give. I'm trying to like really feel the way that I do. As a matter of fact, I just finished doing the dishes at my house, and I was trying to like be mindful of what I was doing when I was doing the dishes, and I can feel my ego in it. Because I want to be the husband that does the dishes. That's my ego. I want people in my family to notice that I did the dishes. And it's so hard to really give something freely with no expectation, with no nothing. like to kind of root out your own ego out of a simple act is so difficult. And I came back to the giving of a ball from one hand to the other. It's such a simple thing. And yet doing the dishes is so much more complicated that I literally stopped. And for 5 minutes, it was a matchbox car that my son had left on the counter. And I just passed it from one hand to the other. It's a really neat practice. I recommend it. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about it because it's so hard to genuinely give freely. And it, like, I can feel my own ego, like the self kind of poking through everywhere.
Yeah. Thank you. I do feel like this has been returned, this like concept of giving without expectations has been returned to so many times. I can think of like three sitcoms, like Friends and stuff, where they're like, there's no giving without, for a reason, like that's benefiting yourself. And like, it's continued, this whole trope is like everywhere anyway.
One thing I brought up is that, is, you know, right in the precept there, it talks about not being stingy with wealth. We hit that and we immediately think of our material possessions, our money and things. And those things are the least important things of our wealth. Even if we didn't have any of those, we could still give. And giving of ourselves, our time, our compassion, our patience. I really like that idea of the patience. You know, non-judgment, all these things are not being stingy with the Dharma. And these are all our wealth. And I think, in my opinion, part of becoming a good Buddhist and proceeding to enlightenment is to lose attachment to material items and not really putting importance on them, and putting importance really on our actions and what we do and how we speak. And that's really, in that sense, I don't think there's a middle path here, because there is no limit to how much compassion, how much patience we should or can give, theoretically, but you know, it's a goal.
Thank you.
If I could add to that, unless there's somebody on land.
No, go ahead.
This isn't what I was going to share, but just to add to what Gathel said, because I thought it was very important. If I'm not having a good day and I can only give you a little bit of patience, that's, I'm giving all I can. I am giving all I can. Now I've forgotten what I was going to, this thing about giving with strings attached, I've moved around a lot in my adult life, and for some reason I've been in various different communities at gift giving times, holiday giving times, birthdays, and I simply learned to completely detach from the gift I got, or the gift I didn't get, or the gift I gave. You know, if you've ever seen somebody giving of self, or giving help, or giving gifts, or whatever, with a sense of expectation, it's creepy. And if it's been done to me, thank you, this is lovely, thank you so much, and I let it go. Because it's too hard. We talked, or I kept bringing up in our little breakout session, how you can really overthink this. And for me, it's too difficult to get caught up in, golly, do I owe him something? Do I need to get her a nicer gift? Do I need to, maybe I should take him out for coffee or something. I can't, it's that sort of spoils the whole thing. I can't get into that. That's all.
Thank you. It's 8:59. Maybe one more. Sure.
Like everybody else, we all wrestled with, you know, where's the line? Where do you draw the line with what you can give? And I think Tonya summed it up best. If you don't feel bad about not giving, if I got that right, that's about as good as you can get. I mean, we talked about seeing poverty in poor countries and that sort of thing. And you just want to try and make it better. You want to give the little kid with the dirty face $100 and, you know, make his life better or whatever. But, you know, you just do what you can. And if you don't feel bad, I guess that's the best you can do. You know, so I hope I captured that right.
Thank you.
All
right. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Coral.
Thank you.
All right, I'll say our little closing verse here. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha, Prajna, Paramita.
Great job.
Thank you, Coral.
Thank you, Coral.
It's really good. Thank you.